The healthcare industry is shifting, and it's time to do something different. North Mississippi Health Services is redesigning healthcare, and we want you to be part of it too.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you for joining another NMHS podcast. I'm pleased to have joining us today Dr. David Pizzamitti. For those I haven't met yet, I'm Shane Spies, President and CEO of North Mississippi Health Services, and I'm excited to have Dr. David Pizzamitti, or Dr. P, we call him, join us today to talk about our internal medicine residency program at North Mississippi Health Services. It's still fairly new. Despite that it's new, it's still having significant contributions in our system, and most importantly, it relates to a number of components of our great redesign strategy. But before I dive into that, Dr. P, share with the audience, you know, the various hats you wear in the organization, in addition to internal medicine residency program.
Well, as you can see by my baldness, I need to wear a lot of hats, and I have several of them. So I'm the associate medical officer of acute care services, which initially was taking over the hospitalist group and all that entailed, getting that structured, and then going through the pandemic, and at the same time applying for receiving accreditation for the internal medicine residency program, and then kind of assisting with some small parts of the startup of a fellowship program as well. And so just a lot of exciting things going on here at North Mississippi Medical Center.
Absolutely. So we'll talk about the internal medicine residency program, but let me set the stage for how important the program is to our healthcare system and even to the entire region that we serve across Northeast Mississippi. And so as we think about a great redesign strategy and our internal medicine residency program, it touches on several different components. And let me highlight those, and we can talk about each of those. But the residency program helps us address access.
Absolutely.
It addresses the growth needs for our organization. It's also an alternative revenue source for our health system. And it touches on evolving how the work gets done, because the residency program helps grow our own talent. So we can talk about some of those. But let's go back several years ago and just remind me why we started the internal medicine residency program.
I mean, so I think it starts with, if you just look at the organization's mission and vision statement, I mean, so mission statement is to continuously improve the care of patients in our, of people in our region. And then, you know, the vision is providing the best healthcare in America for patients and family. And you can't do that without physicians and without, you know, internal medicine physicians. We already have family medicine, which was providing a really important, you know, component of care delivery in our system, predominantly in the ambulatory setting. However, internal medicine, it's really adult care. And what a lot of people probably don't know is that in addition to being an internal medicine physician, it's also kind of the first step into a number of subspecialties. Cardiology, pulmonary critical care, I mean, a number of them that we could get more specific about later. But in order to meet that mission and vision, you know, having the vision to start creating our own pipeline of doctors was really the impetus for having the program get started. And then I think as we go through, you know, each letter in the acronym of a great design, redesign, we could really see how it impacts almost every single one of those things.
Yeah, and so we were fortunate to find Dr. Pizzamitti fairly close within the Northeast Mississippi region. And fortunately, we found Dr. P, and based on his experience, he was the sure guy to help start our program here. And so we started the program several years ago. And tell us specifically when and how we started the program in terms of number of physicians, but also remind me several years ago kind of the shortage of physicians we're faced with, especially in internal medicine.
Yeah, I mean, so I think even taking a step back before that, the way that I got to Mississippi was through the National Health Service Corps. So the Service Corps basically pays your loans off to work in an underserved area. And so when I was finishing residency way back in 2005 and looking at, you know, high need areas, I did my training at Mount Sinai in Miami Beach. So went from Miami Beach to Holly Springs, Mississippi. And, you know, I'd work in the ER, I'd work in the hospital, in the clinic. And then it became really apparent we need a lot more doctors here. We need to improve access to care. Plus, it's also, as a physician, it's really intellectually stimulating. Everything that you've ever read about, you actually see here and get to take care of. And, you know, it's amazing, a lot of the medical education, and there's great systems in other parts of the country, but you really see everything and get to, you know, really, really make a difference here. So then moving forward to then seeing that need on a personal level and then being able to be a part of expanding, you know, that pipeline of physicians that are going to be able to contribute to improving the health and lives of the people in our region was really the reason why we, you know, you had the foresight to recruit me, and it was such an awesome opportunity. And then started our initial application for the program in 2019. Our first group of trainees did, so there, it's a long process. You don't just start a residency program. There's a governing body called the American Council of Graduate Medical Education, or ACGME for short. And that is the body that accredits all residency training programs in the country. And so you have to apply for the program. The initial step is called initial accreditation. And then after you get residents on site, they come back and do another site visit for continued accreditation. And so we kind of went through those two steps, got initial accreditation, then continued accreditation. And we're now getting pretty close to graduating our first, you know, group of residents that have, you know, worked through our system. And just watching them grow from kind of a novice learner right out of med school to a competent physician. I mean, that's really the buzzword is, the minimum standard that we're really trying to meet and ensure to the public and the region that we serve is that we're producing competent doctors that, you know, not only are smart from a medical knowledge standpoint, but have adequate communication skills and professionalism and know how to navigate the system of practice that's so complicated. I mean, and that's what that 36 months of training does, is get them kind of in the trenches, both in the ambulatory and inpatient center. They get that experience under initially very direct supervision to where they start having more autonomous supervision as they meet certain milestones in their educational development.
Yeah, and so this goes back to growing our own talent, right?
Yeah.
And so we have how many residents in the program today?
We have 35 today. And we're going to a much bigger number.
Right. And then tell us what typically the career path for those residents, how many will stay in internal medicine and then others will may pursue additional training?
Yeah, so there's a national average on that, that about out of all of the internal medicine, and by the way, internal medicine is the largest subspecialty in all of graduate medical education. The most trainees all over the country are in, even though there's surgical and surgical subspecialties, and but IM is the largest in the country. And so out of that group of internal medicine trained physicians, it's a three-year training program. 70% of those will elect to go into a fellowship or subspecialty. And from internal medicine, those subspecialists, that 70% can choose from cardiology, gastroenterology, pulmonary critical care, rheumatology, endocrinology, nephrology, allergy and immunology. I mean, you really have a wide array of specialists that have to do internal medicine first. And then depending on what they want to go into, the training programs, the longest that I can think of off the top of my head is EP cardiology, because then you do 3 years of IM followed by 3 years of cardiology and then two more years of electrophysiology. And then shorter ones, like I think I left out geriatrics before. That's a one-year fellowship after that. But all of them are somewhere between 1 and 4 to 5 years, the majority being 2 to 3 extra years.
So there's an opportunity that out of those 35 residents, as each class completes their three-year residency with us, they may have the option to remain with us as a hospitalist. Yep. Within our healthcare system. They may choose to practice general internal medicine in the outpatient setting for us. And then a number of those, as you mentioned, will pursue subspecialty fellowship training programs, kind of like the similar to the cardiology fellowship program that we're starting here in North Mississippi.
Yeah, exactly. And with that, that's going to be able to provide that second leg of training. And, you know, there is a well-known statistic that for out of the vast majority, it's about 70 to 75% of trainees are going to stay close to where they train, especially if there's opportunities for them. So, you know, and in my past experience as a program director, that average, the average of how many went into specialties, how many stay, and so if 70% go into subspecialties, 30% stay in general internal medicine. out of that 30%, about 90% become hospitalists. So one area that we are seeing a shrinking number of internal medicine physicians is in the ambulatory space. And so, you know, something that we're trying to work on reinvigorating that, you know, love of outpatient medicine, but that is something that's changing and evolving over time. And so the, you know, out of the, and with the cardiology fellowship, now we kind of have an opportunity to train that second layer of their training to become competent cardiologists.
Yeah. So we're excited about graduating the first class in June of this year, right?
Yeah.
We'll celebrate that first graduation. Talk about a bit about the future size of the program. We've recently increased the size of that program, but we're not stopping where we are today, correct?
No, yeah. And we did this very deliberately to, you know, ensure that we had the infrastructure available to provide everyone with a really valuable educational experience. And also at the same time, it's not just training the residents, you're also training faculty to kind of, you know, grow in that role also. So we started with 12 residents in our first class, and then we took 12 residents in the first three classes. And then this is the first year we had a match where we ended up taking 24 residents. And then every year after this will be 24. And like I said, it's a three-year program, so we'll be up to 72 total residents within the next 3 years.
Yeah, that's exciting. And so tell us a little bit about how we're introduced to the residents who decide to come to Tupelo and North Mississippi Health Services. That's, of course, changed in terms of the numbers, but give us a sense of how popular we've become as a program.
Yeah, so interview season starts about every September. The medical students or international medical graduates, they all apply to residencies around the country through a system called ERS. It's an electronic system where they can choose, you know, so many programs that they want to apply to. And so to let you know, in our first year, when we first started the program in 2019, and then we had our first interview class towards the end of 2020, in that first group, we had about 1,000 applicants. In this last round of interview season, which ended in March, we had about 3,600 applicants.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so, which is good, and that's 3,600 applicants for 24 spots.
Very competitive.
Yeah, very competitive. And unfortunately for a lot of the students, there's a lot of unmatched positions at the end of the process. So, I mean, you really have a great pool of great candidates, and we try to, it's not just only based on test scores. We try to find the people that are the right fit for, you know, our culture here, that, you know, mirror our community, that are, you know, they're smart, but they're good people, and they're also, you know, are coachable and are looking for constructive feedback. I mean, because that's what we have to give them on a regular basis on that journey towards competence.
Yeah, we'll share with the audience why a residency program like internal medicine residency program, how that makes us better providers and a better healthcare system.
Yeah, so kind of in a number of ways. If you look at, you know, care that's provided by internal medicine physicians, you're talking about, so the largest provider group in our system is the hospitalist group here. And so they are, for the majority, internal medicine trained physicians. So if you're admitted to the hospital, chances are you're going to be about over 80% of all the patients admitted to the hospital here are admitted by the hospitalist group. So you're going to be taken care of by an internal medicine trained physician that went through a lot of training on the front end, whether here or somewhere else prior to that. And then if they consult a specialist, we already kind of talked about all the different subspecialties. Chances are, especially if it's not a surgeon, the majority of those were trained in internal medicine and then did a fellowship for subspecialty training after that. And then oftentimes, if you go back to the outpatient setting, you might follow up with that specialist in their clinic that was internal medicine trained initially, and or a general internal medicine doctor, either, you know, at our IMA clinic or at our resident clinic. So you potentially are being cared for in any number of arenas by an internal medicine trained doctor. And that is something that, if the pandemic kind of taught us anything, it's we really need to create our own pipelines. I mean, just accessing providers and you know, other clinical staff, nursing, it can be really challenging. And there's a shortage, you know, throughout the country. I mean, and we really need to evolve in that arena to improve, you know, growth and access to care and all those other things that we're trying to do to provide the best care for patients in our community.
Absolutely. And so when we think about the internal medicine residency program, we think about the residents, but there's also a lot of infrastructure that supports the program. You mentioned faculty that supports it. And we always think about the cost that goes into supporting a residency program. But there are a lot of financial incentives for a health system like ours to provide a residency program, even from a financially positive point. So talk a little bit why it's a financially positive program. So you're not just training residents, you're also adding to the bottom line of the health system. How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, in order to have a healthcare system that can take care of patients, it has to be financially viable in order to, you know, continue to pay salaries and take care of patients and get patients, you know, access to the leading edge equipment and care and to educate staff continually and, you know, electronic medical records and all of those things. And so there is a significant initial expenditure for the organization to bring to create this. The good thing is the Centers for Medicare Services, CMS, they've recognized this a long time ago, and they began paying institutions or organizations to train physicians, knowing that we're going to perpetually need a workforce of providers. And so CMS provides both direct and indirect funds that not only cover the salaries and benefits of the residents, but also end up paying for, you know, the salaries of the faculty members. And you know, it ends up being a positive for the organization. So it's not a drain. And then there's also, you know, other alternative sources of, you know, for the second A there in our A Great Redesign. So we have that where CMS, you know, realizing that we need to, you know, keep program solvent training doctors. But then there's opportunities for grants. We received a grant from the state of Mississippi, Accelerate Mississippi grant, where they paid the startup costs. It was around $750,000. We received another grant from the state for resident well-being and faculty development. And then you have other, you know, recruitment costs. For every physician that you successfully recruit, the statistic is it costs about $250,000 in, you know, overall recruitment costs. So if we can create our own pipeline of trainees, I mean, that's revenue saved that can be used towards other things. And then it even spirals down further than that. The more docs we keep in the community, so if we end up training a medical student to go through internal medicine residency and then go through cardiology, becomes a cardiologist on our medical staff, they're employing people, they're, you know, paying taxes, they buy a home here in the community, they spend money. It ends up being a revenue source for the whole community here as well.
Yeah, well, I think you have a special gift of not only starting but sustaining a very strong residency program in a community hospital or community health system setting, which is very different from a major academic hospital. And, you know, why do you think a health system like ours, that community-based setting, is a special place to train and to grow our physicians of the future?
So I've had one thing that is really interesting about my journey to ultimately ending up within, you know, this organization is I did have a stop in Holly Springs, Mississippi, where I worked at a really small kind of critical access hospital. Then I went to kind of a mid-sized hospital in Corinth, Mississippi at Magnolia. So I've had kind of, you know, and so if I get called from an outside physician trying to transfer someone over, I kind of understand the limitations to resources and so on and so forth, and what they can actually care for appropriately in those areas. And so the thing about this, getting back to your initial question, this is a community hospital, but this is an amazing place because it has all of the resources of a large tertiary or quaternary care center. I mean, we have great specialists here and great, I mean, the things that we're doing with, you know, cardiovascular disease, it is such an, it has the ability for trainees to come here and see anything from disease pathology and then the treatments that we can offer people in rural Mississippi, which is so cool from my aspect of teaching, that when we do, and we do 2 hours of lectures every day with the residents. And so the first hour is just kind of going through all of the elements of internal medicine that they need to learn. And then we do case presentations the second hour. And the stuff that comes in here is stuff that you'd see at large academic centers. So it also tells me that there's an opportunity to grow even more GME programs here and more fellowship opportunities, because we have the pathology here and we need more, you know, physicians here. So again, this is a community hospital, and that's a great thing in terms of the culture of the organization. It doesn't seem to have that same level of bureaucracy that you'd have at, you know, other training areas. And in a lot of ways, that's great, but you also have, you know, the experience that you'd get at anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about it is you can take care of just about all of it here. At a lot of other smaller community hospitals, you can only take care of patients up to a certain level, and then they need to get transferred out somewhere else. Here, we're the ones accepting most of those transfers and taking care of those patients.
Yeah, so the residents and the physicians here get to see a lot of different pathology and conditions that they otherwise wouldn't be able to treat or deal with at other hospitals.
Absolutely. Yeah. That, and with the limitations to resources and the poverty level and, you know, the other barriers, the socioeconomic determinants of health. If you can train to be a competent doctor in Mississippi with, you know, all the challenges, you could work anywhere in the country or world for that matter.
Absolutely.
And be really effective.
Yeah. So, Dr. P, tell us a little about the future of the program as you see it and as we have planned so far across our healthcare system. You mentioned earlier the increased number of residents that we'll seek to add to the program over time. How do you see the program evolving?
Yeah. So, again, the goal here, when I start a program and every day while we're cultivating it during this growth phase, is we really have a duty to the public to ensure that we're training competent doctors. And so, you know, I think the foundation that we developed here with our, you know, really rigorous academic curriculum, and our trainees, they do a test each year. We were in the top 25% in the country of our upper level residents on that in training exam that they do. There's a national survey that goes out to all the trainees, and our residents are really happy with the training that they're getting, and that's kind of the data that we get back, and that's how we evolve and grow and kind of listen to our residents. And, you know, in addition to giving them feedback, it's a bi-directional conversation. I mean, we really need to talk to our people. They're in training, but they're adults. They're really well educated. They're really bright, and they're in the trenches every day. So they have a lot of great ideas that really help us to kind of build the program in the right way. And I think that's really important with our program. And the step as we start to as we grow, we work at one other thing that's really important is to create a culture that is. It's supportive. It's hard. A lot of these kids, for the first time, they're out there and they're dealing with death. They're dealing with, you know, families and, their loved ones suffering and just working through that process and learning. But it can be really challenging. And so giving them, you know, the ability to be resilient in the face of those challenges and be in a really supportive and caring environment. And that, to me, is that in the next phase, I know we have the infrastructure in terms of the teams and how we operationalize things and how we educate them. It's really important to me that we don't lose that really close-knit culture and supportive culture as we grow, because that is something that can get diluted. So that's why I'm ensuring that we're bringing in, you know, associate program directors and faculty to ensure that they have enough support to kind of make sure that we're always training competent doctors even throughout this growth.
So we'll have doubled the number of residents in the program over the next 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Double.
Yeah. Yeah, double. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. So we've touched on kind of several components of a great redesign and how the internal medicine residency program supports a great redesign strategy. I just want to kind of close out with you and I summarizing that impact. And as we think about access, clearly the objective of the program is to, as you said, create competent physicians. But it's to grow the number of physicians, competent physicians available in this region to take care of patients in this region. And We believe, given the success of the family medicine residency program that started in the early 90s, and that we expect the same success in internal medicine residency here. So the increasing number of physicians available should also grow our capacity to take care of more patients within our system, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And when they publish data on, you know, state-related data on healthcare quality, Mississippi generally ends up ranking last or near last in a lot of the different outcome data, whether it's infant mortality, whether it's, you know, again, a lot of potential morbidity that could be could be alleviated. And a big part of that, where we almost always rank last, is access to care. I think a lot of states are trying to deal with this in different ways, whether they're, you know, pushing more mid-levels into that, which I think is really, mid-levels are very important part of the healthcare team. Some are trying to bring in, you know, like in Alabama and Tennessee, they've changed some laws around to bring in international medical graduates without residency training, which is going to be a unique set of challenges as well. They might be very smart, but just learning to navigate the U.S. health system and advocate for your patients takes a lot of time to learn that. And I think we're really doing it the right way, training people in our system on a large scale that are not only going to be here in Tupelo, but hopefully they'll be able to go to all of our surrounding communities and, you know, be the ambulatory doc, the hospitalist, be a subspecialist that comes back and works in those areas. It'll be really fun to maybe have a follow-up conversation 10, 15 years. Yep. And see the impact that this is going to have.
Well, that's pretty cool. You think about when we double the size and we have 72 residents at any given time working within our healthcare system, we not only have 72 residents, but we have basically 72 additional families into our communities. Yep. They're taking part and participating. I know one of the things that you've encouraged the residents to do is to engage not only within our system, but also within our community. So we appreciate you getting them involved in our communities.
And that's important. I mean, they're going to be leaders, not just in the organization, but within their communities. And, you know, that's a great thing for this region and for Tupelo in particular, is we're bringing in a lot of young, energetic people that are very well educated, and they have, you know, young and growing families. And if the statistics tell us, and it's early to see now, but because we're just about to graduate our first class, there's going to be a large percentage of those folks that are going to stay here and, you know, be a part of the medical staff here and be leaders in the community, leaders in the medical staff. And we're starting that from the beginning of their training, making sure they're on committees in the hospital, that's kind of woven into the fabric of their, you know, makeup as a physician.
Yeah, which is different than a lot of programs.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
It's kind of a different twist that we add, or I guess a value that we add to it for the residents' experience. So good. Thank you, Dr. Pizzamenti, for joining us, and thank you for your leadership of our internal medicine residency program, our hospitalist program, and supporting the entire acute operations for our health system. So thank you for your leadership and contributions. I thank the audience for joining us today. Again, we want to hear from you. We'd like to get feedback on the podcast, not only as a format, but also are we addressing the topics that are of interest to you? I want to make sure to remind you that we've attached show notes to the podcast that you can use to easily share that feedback to us. So again, thank you for joining us. Appreciate you again, Dr. Pizzamenti.
Absolutely. Thank you.